Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
Hey guys, Dr. Mike Wu Ming. Welcome to another edition of Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician and healthcare entrepreneurs. Have you ever thought about a different career outside of medicine? We've discussed non-clinical careers. And one of the ways that you can branch out into medicine that's not necessarily a non-clinical role is to go in through industry or big pharma or work for a big biotech company. And I have an expert who has done exactly that. She's a chief medical officer of a biotech company and a pediatric endocrinologist. Her transition into the pharmaceutical industry occurred earlier in her career, and she has now accumulated more than 18 years of experience working in biotech and pharma, started a career in medical affairs, moved into clinical development, and she's experienced including both small to large biotech and both private and public companies. Recently, she's been involved in helping other physicians to get into the industry, into a brand new field that they may not have any experience, may have little experience in, and has been successfully helping other physicians into this arena. So I'd like to bring to the table, and you know what, Nerissa, I don't want to mess up, so I'm going to edit this part. Make sure I pronounce your last name correctly, because I always call you Nerissa. I never call you by your last name.
Yeah, it's Crayer, so rhymes with prayer.
All right. And I want to welcome into the program Dr. Nerissa Crayer. Nerissa, how are you doing?
I'm great, Mike. Thanks so much for having me.
Great. And I've gotten to know you. You're in our mastermind, physician mastermind group, and how you've been successfully helping other doctors get into this field. So I always want to know, because it's certainly, I believe this, maybe you weren't thinking of this as a career when you were back in medical school, or maybe I'm mistaken. So maybe just talk about your background, and then what led you to getting into this type of industry.
Certainly. So my understanding of the biotech and pharmaceutical industry really came when I was in my fellowship, and there was a pediatric endocrinologist who had actually completed her whole career. So she had been a full professor at UCLA and then transitioned into pharma. So I was aware of her, but she had a very different trajectory, of course, than I did. So she was sort of a thought leader or key opinion leader and then transitioned. So it was very unusual in my understanding at the time that physicians could transition soon after they had finished their training. I came to the biotech industry because a role that I was planning on taking, actually in an academic role, was eliminated at the time. And so I started looking around, and through my network, one of the sales representatives from the biotech company passed my resume along. And that's really how I stepped into that first role in medical affairs 18 years ago.
So you actually started up in fellowship. Did you feel the need to get some clinical experience before then? I mean, maybe just discuss your feelings, because this is often some feelings that I often hear from other physicians who get into non-clinical careers.
Yeah. So during my fellowship, I knew that I wanted to do academic clinical research. So I did do a master's in clinical research during my fellowship, but that wasn't with the intent of going into the pharmaceutical industry. It was really with the intent of doing academic clinical research. And so what I would say to other physicians who want to work in industry or are considering that transition, you don't necessarily need any other training than your medical training. So there are people who might have MBAs, there are people who might have gotten a master's in clinical research like I did, but that's not a prerequisite. Really what we need is that medical clinical knowledge and training to help people make that transition.
So what initially drew you into going to this, this field?
Yeah. So the original draw was it was a bit fortuitous because I was in this situation of the academic role fell through. I had young kids. I needed a job. And there weren't a lot of other opportunities for pediatric endocrinologists where I am in the Boston area. And so I really took a chance on going into pharma, knowing that at the time I could reverse that decision and go back into academics a couple of years later if it didn't work out. So I think, you know, I did take a chance. And I think that speaks to a mindset piece here of being able to take a chance and know that the decision doesn't have to be your final career decision.
Hey, happy to announce something really cool that you won't want to miss. We just launched The Lounge. This is a free weekly newsletter tailored just for you, the physician, entrepreneur, and investor. You're going to stay ahead with the latest news in tech trends, entrepreneurial strategies, alternative investing, and passive income tips. And there's so much more, all designed to further your career and financial goals, delivered straight to your inbox every week. We'll also be spotlighting fellow physician entrepreneurs, sharing success stories, and providing valuable lessons from peers who are navigating the same exciting path that you are. No cost, no hassle, just important insights delivered straight to you every week. To sign up, just go to bootstrapmd.com/the lounge and subscribe today. It's 100% free. Once you enter the lounge, get ready to start shaping your future now.
What are some like myths that you think when, because I know you work with a lot of doctors, they're getting into this field. What are some myths or some misbeliefs that they should know beforehand or just be aware of before they decide to dip their toe into this?
Yeah. So one of the most common myths that physicians come with is that they need to be of a specific specialty. So I'll have people get on the phone to talk to me and ask questions, and they will say things like, well, I'm not an oncologist, or well, you know, I'm not fellowship trained. And in fact, I've been able to help a wide variety of physicians land roles in the pharma industry. So from internal medicine with no fellowship training, family medicine would be another example, general pediatrics, all the way through the hematologist and oncologist. But if you think about drug development, there is active drug development across a wide variety of specialties. And so if people will look at their training, look at their expertise, then they can help to sell, if you will, themselves in the interview process. Another myth that I commonly hear people say is just misunderstanding job descriptions. So they get on LinkedIn, they start looking at job descriptions, and they see that the companies are asking for 4 years, 5 years of industry experience, and they won't apply for those jobs. But in fact, what I counsel people to do is to apply for any job that's asking for 5 years or less of industry experience, because obviously, if you don't have any experience, you're not going to be able to apply for any job. So you do have to take a leap of faith and apply for those roles. And then when you get the interview, again, you're selling your experience and expertise and how you can use that in this role that you're applying for.
What are the benefits for a physician to enter big pharma biotech industry?
Yeah. So I think of the intellectual benefit being that you're always surrounded by new ideas, new thinking, lots of innovation. You're also surrounded by people who aren't all physicians. So you're learning from biostatisticians, you're learning from commercial colleagues, you're learning from regulatory colleagues. So there's this always ongoing learning opportunity that I think draws a lot of physicians into medicine in the first place. From more practical benefits, there's typically not call. So I do have to work on some evenings and some weekends. I do have to travel some, but I'm not carrying a pager and I'm not on, you know, a rotating call situation. So lots more time freedom. We don't work on the weekends. Again, I might have to go to a conference or travel, but generally speaking, our weekends are free to us. And then the final thing I would say is in medicine, most physicians are jockeying for trading Thanksgiving and the Christmas holiday or another holiday. And in this situation, we have all of those holidays off typically. And so lots more time freedom overall.
And then I also assume you're not having to carry some type of malpractice, or is there any type of liability that biotech physicians should be aware of?
That's actually a great point, Mike. So we're not practicing medicine. So we don't need to have malpractice insurance. There are other types of insurance that a company will have, but nothing specific to the physician necessarily, just because, again, we're not in charge of any specific patient care.
So we talked about the benefits, but we also have to, is there any drawbacks that we should be aware of? I'm sure you've dealt with a lot of physicians who are like, I want to do something different. They come to you and you probably realize maybe they're not best prepared for this. What are some things that they should be aware of?
Right. I'm smiling because there definitely are some things. So going back to what I was saying about learning from all of these different kinds of people, there is the necessity of recognizing that no longer are you the key decision maker. And so I recognize that now with clinical practice, there are other decision makers, administration, insurance companies, et cetera. But the physician's still pretty much at the top of the totem pole about a lot of decisions for patients and their recommendations. In pharma and biotech, there is cross-functional decision making. And there may be a time, for example, when maybe you want something specific in a clinical trial design, but for budget purposes or for timeline purposes, you're not able to do that. So it does require a personality where you can step away from it always being your decision to make. And there is the requirements for some humility in that. I think the other thing is getting used to corporate. There are differing ways of communicating with people that are not necessarily negative and actually a good learning experience, but it is a different experience than working in a clinical medical.
As a doctor, I wasn't used to asking for help, especially when it came to subjects outside of medicine. But then I found physiciancoaches.com. In an instant, I found hundreds of experts to help me in all aspects of life, on areas I was afraid to ask. Dealing with burnout, starting a side gig, money management, even help with my marriage. And the best part? Nearly all experts are physicians themselves. After reading their profile and a quick chat, I knew I found the right mentor for me. At physiciancoaches.com, help from professional colleagues is just a click away.
Practice situation.
Now, you had mentioned your first job. It was basically someone knew you. There was some networking involved. It didn't sound like there was like an ad, you know, for this position. It was either you knew someone or someone knows you. Is that correct?
So that was true. And I will say networking is very important. When I'm working with physician clients, we spend time thinking about networking. And that's actually a myth as well. People get in their heads about not wanting to bother someone or not wanting to make a mistake in networking. And so we do spend a lot of time talking about the fact that generally, people want to help one another. And so networking is really critical. But you're right. In my situation, my first role was part of my network. But I will say, you know, when this sales representative asked me for my resume, I could have said, this is crazy. There's no way I'm going to get a job. You know, I'm not going to do that. But I didn't. I said, okay, you know, why not give it a try? She has an opportunity to share my resume. And so again, that mindset of putting yourself out there, being willing to potentially fail and taking a chance really is what helped me land that first role.
And then in line of networking, you're in Massachusetts, you're in Boston, the Boston area. You know, obviously there's a lot of startups and, you know, tech. So how important is it to be in a location that's, you know, like a Silicon Valley or something like that versus Dubuque, Iowa? And no offense to any Dubuque, Iowa residents, but it's right. probably not known as a big biotech, you know, area. How important is it to be in these fast-moving, tech-friendly cities?
Sure. So I do think it's beneficial, but it's certainly not necessary. Especially with COVID, we have seen a real change to the ability to work in a remote situation or a hybrid situation. So as an example, a recent example, I had a medical director who was living in a completely different state and traveled into our offices in the Boston area, you know, once a month or something like that. So there certainly are more opportunities now for that remote type work. Again, you know, being able to be in the office and be close. Some companies have gone back to a requirement, but I think most have recognized that people can be effective in working from home and are moving more to those models.
So I guess in your experience, did you have to go into an office every day? Or maybe since COVID, has there been more remote, you know, work done that you're able to do from your own home?
Right. Certainly. So in my early days, it was more typical that you would go in 4 to 5 days a week. There sometimes was some flexibility. For example, I would work from home on a Friday, as an example, especially given that I was doing a decent amount of travel in my medical affairs role. Now with COVID, the typical situation for many physicians is 1 to 2 days in an office, but flexibility for people who also enjoy working in the office and, you know, opportunity if I wanted to be in the office 3, 4 days. So that amount of flexibility, I think, is, again, one of the benefits. So if I have a doctor's appointment for myself or some, you know, thing I need to manage, I don't necessarily have to go into the office every day.
Now, we're talking with Nerissa Carrere, coach.com. And in your bio, you mentioned you also hold an MBA from Northeastern University. So how important is it to get an MBA in this type of field?
So it's not, and certainly not a requirement. Also worth mentioning that it's not a requirement to have a PhD either. So sometimes people think you have to be an MD PhD or an MD MBA. Not at all necessary. I actually chose to get my MBA after I was working in the industry. I had an opportunity that one of my mentors had done this program and wanted me to do it. And the company actually pretty much covered the tuition for that MBA. So I was in a very good situation to have that covered. And I did it because I was very much interested in the business aspects. So I wanted to learn more about finance, for example, about accounting, so that I could be a better partner to some of my colleagues.
It makes a lot of sense. Now, in pharma, of course, it kind of runs the gamut. You've got your stalwarts, right? Your Mercks, your Johnsons and Johnsons. And then, you know, there's probably some that are attracted by that hot startup that's coming out with some new anti-cancer drug with perhaps, you know, they've got some equity positions that they want to, you know, throw your way. What do you recommend for like someone, a doctor going in and they're seeing it and they're deciding which way is there to go? Because I'm assuming you've dealt with both, you know, both ways that you can do this.
Right. So I started in a larger biotech pharma company, and then I've worked in companies as small as about 25 people and not even public, but still private. What I recommend to most of my clients coming in with no experience is that they focus on the larger companies first. A couple of reasons for that. They're going to get more disciplined technical training at those companies where they really learn the, we call them SOPs, right? Standard operating procedures, and how to really do whatever the role is with all of the supporting people around you. There are also just more positions in those bigger pharma companies, so your opportunity is better. They're hiring more people, generally speaking. For the smaller companies, startups, you know, the 40, 50, 100 people companies, many of them are going to want physicians with experience. And the reason for that is maybe they only have one physician hire to even bring on board in a particular year. And it's very difficult when you're moving at such a fast pace in a startup to really train someone in all of the things that they need to learn. So it's much more typical that someone transitions to that smaller biotech environment after having some larger pharma experience. It's not to say it can't be done, but it's just, I would say, a more straightforward path and better training ground.
Now, you had mentioned earlier that you help, you know, doctors from different specialties. I mean, I was surprised you mentioned primary care, because I always thought that this is a specialty type of, you know, position that there is. Are there certain types of specialties that more caters to the pharmaceutical industry?
Right. So what I tell people to think about is, if you think about, you know, the drugs that are out there, or I'm not a big fan of marketing pharma products on TV, but the drugs that are being advertised on TV, right? Yeah. So oncology is certainly a hot area. There's a lot of oncology drug development. But there's also drug development in, for example, endocrinology, right? Think about all the drugs for type 2 diabetes as an example, obesity now as an example. So that's endocrine. Gastroenterology, so for UC and Crohn's would be an example, right? So if you think about those areas, that can kind of help you match to the specialties that are hot. Immunology would be another one. Rheumatology might be another one. However, the more primary care folks, they also have some level of expertise in these areas, right? They might not be the person that's getting referred the patient with Crohn's, but they're involved in diagnosing Crohn's, for example. So for the generalists, they can get roles in medical affairs. They can land roles in what we call pharmacovigilance or drug safety. So drug safety is all about evaluating safety signals. And so that really is our clinical and medical knowledge. And who is better versed to even learn about a new disease than a physician, right? So you don't have to necessarily have that specialty training, but there are times that it certainly can be helpful to land a specific role.
This podcast is sponsored by Doc-to-Doc Lending. Are you a physician looking to consolidate your loans or maybe start a new project like opening up your own clinic? Doc-to-Doc Lending understands the unique financial challenges you face and is here to support you every step of the way. You can benefit from low interest rates, a lightning fast approval process, and personalized loan options tailored exclusively for physicians. This company was founded by doctors for doctors. Don't let financial limitations hold you back any longer. Visit bootstrapmd.com/doc-to-doc to unlock your path into financial freedom today. That's bootstrapmd.com/doc-2-doc, and you can get started right away. Doc-to-Doc Lending helps empower physicians one loan at a time.
Now, it's always good to see, you know, have an idea, you know, what it would be like to be in your shoes. You know, most physicians, you know, they're going to the hospital, they're going to the clinic, they know they're going to be seeing patients all day, working on their EMR, and then hopefully going home later that day. That's a typical, you know, day for a doctor. What is it for a typical doctor in the pharmaceutical industry? Or is that?
Right. Yeah, right. That's a great question. One of the fun things, and I think one of the reasons that I've enjoyed working in industry for almost 20 years now, is it is different every day, and actually different every hour. So I usually start my day around 8-ish, finish my day around 5:30, maybe 6, depending on what's going on. We do have a number of meetings. So depending on the role and what you're doing, you might be meeting with colleagues to talk about clinical trial design, for example, or something we call a target product profile, where we're trying to define what are the characteristics of a drug that we would take forth in development. So what kind of efficacy signals would we anticipate? What kind of safety signals? How much drug? How often is it dosed? That's just an example. So lots of meetings. I do still travel. I get to interact with patients in patient advocacy groups. And so that can be very rewarding. Attending conferences and congresses. So one of the perks is actually often you don't have to, again, kind of barter with people about, I want to go to one specific conference and you go to another because we need to cover for each other. But you have the opportunity to really stay up to date and attend all the congresses in that specialty area. So some travel involved. And, you know, my meetings can go from working on something one-on-one, just individually by myself, like a clinical trial protocol, to very big meetings where we're strategizing about what 3 years from now is going to look like. So incredibly varied, and sometimes very detailed work, and sometimes, you know, bigger picture type work.
That's great. So I do have to talk about this because it comes up all the time, anytime I talk about non-clinical careers, and that's pay. You know, they don't want to do this, but am I going to be making the same amount of money as a doctor? If it's less, how much less? What's your answer? Because I'm sure you get this question quite a bit.
Yes, I do. So I think for the specialties that are procedural based that do get paid more than specialties that aren't procedural based, sometimes that trade-off can be difficult to make, even with the time saved, the lack of call, et cetera. Most of the packages in industry include a base salary and then a percent bonus that's typically, you know, you make your bonus, generally speaking, unless there's something really quite catastrophic that's happened. And then, as you mentioned at the beginning, there is equity from a stock perspective. So with that, starting around the director level, a typical starting salary ballpark would be in the high 200s. And then a bonus on that, a percentage, is going to be probably in the 20% range, maybe 25% range in a larger pharma company. So you can see you start to get up into the 300s quite quickly. And so for, you know, a pediatric endocrinologist, for example, that trade-off is easily made. For a general pediatrician, perhaps, that trade-off is easily made. For an orthopedic surgeon, different numbers we're talking about.
Right. And just like as anything, you're trading away lifestyle, you know, you're trading away regular hours, more time with the family. There's always that. So, you know, I know there's some doctors who may have looked into industry, and question I come up with is, well, you know, I see these ads and they're always asking me for experience. And I'm, let's say, my mid-career or early mid-career, I'm just seeing patients. What would you answer for them for saying, you know, I don't have any experience? Or how do they get experience if they're seeing patients all day? What would you recommend?
Right. So first, I go through with them and highlight that they actually do have experience. So their first experience is all of their medical and clinical knowledge about diseases. And that's sort of, that's what they bring to the table in many of these roles. But physicians also have leadership experience. They have management experience because they're leading a team. They're managing their team. So they often discount that. And for whatever reason, you know, many of us as physicians, we're perfectionists. We don't give ourselves credit for all of our experience. So I really have to tease that out of people. And that's something we do from both the mindset perspective, but also specifically getting that down on their resume. Now, on the flip side of that, what can they do to gain experience? I often will suggest that people bring or take the opportunity to participate in an IRB, for example, if they're interested in clinical development, that could be something. they could think about trying to participate at the academic level in clinical trials. But again, that is not necessary. Their experience comes from taking care of patients and their clinical knowledge.
It's very, again, it's a question that I see come up quite a bit. And then finally, you decided to help other physicians, and you now coach physicians to get into this industry. What led you to launching Industry MD Coach?
Right. So it was in the thick of COVID, and it was the way I could help my physician colleagues that I saw in other coaching programs that were hurting, that were burnt out, that were feeling scared. And I thought that this was a way I could share with them a different opportunity to use their training. And so I put it out into the universe and actually have, over the past 3 years, been able to help, you know, upwards of 75 physicians in Wow. some way, shape, or form with resumes, with interview prep. And so I'm really glad that I did that because I have had an opportunity to help my colleagues.
You share some of maybe perhaps one or two success stories for people who work with you.
Sure. I actually